The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Man, this Michael Rotundo from outside of Syracuse, New York. This guy's a piece of work. Just this is a 30-year-old guy that was living with his parents. Apparently he's been living with them, I heard it, for 8 years is one thing. I'm trying to get some decent audio. I think I got this here. There was audio from court, but you couldn't hear it really good. But the judge was laughing.
Wow.
The judge was laughing at times. Just, he was just like, you know, I can't believe that we're
right
here. But he listened to all of it and then, you know, dismissed it. Now, he's, Michael Rotundo's going to appeal. He wanted at least 6 more months.
Why? Because he has plants.
and here, I'm going to play this audio. This audio here where he actually talked to a reporter about what he wanted, okay?
All right.
So here we go. All right.
Do you feel like, are you taking this to court for a larger idea of like parental rights and what they're able to do, or is it just, like on a personal matter?
No, it's, well, when you handle any case, it's inclusive of everything. Mm-hmm. So it was inclusive of everything. What I'm doing is inclusive of everything. I really can't comment on too specifically on what more it goes into. I was trying not to do much of a comment on anything, but I was so outraged.
He's outraged.
Outraged. How dare they ask me to get up and get out, go get a job and respect them. I'm outraged. What do they think they are, my parents?
Because we had wondered, you know, how long he'd been living with them. The Rotundos say their son has been living with them for the past 8 years without paying rent or contributing in any way. The judge tried to convince Michael to come to an agreement with his parents on his own, but when he refused, he ordered him out of the house.
Yeah.
It was not decided in court on Tuesday how long Michael would be given to move out. If you haven't heard of this story, a New York judge has ordered a 30-year-old man to move out of his parents' home after the couple tried and failed for months to get their deadbeat son out at a Tuesday hearing, which lasted about 30 minutes. New York State Supreme Court Judge Donald Greenwood sided with the parents. They've been trying to evict their unemployed only son, Michael, for months because he refuses to pay rent or contribute in any way around the house. Michael argued in court on Tuesday that legal precedent allows him 6 months' notice before his parents could kick him out. The judge pointed out another case that nullified that previous decision and called 6 months an outrageous amount of time to ask. Michael responded that it was outrageous to evict him. He left court frustrated, refusing to speak to his parents and saying he didn't think the judge read the case fully.
Read the case fully.
But that's not a hard case to read.
Right.
You're living in the house, not paying rent, not contributing. You're 30 years old.
Time to go.
You have no legal right to be there. This really isn't complicated.
Bye-bye. See ya. Get out.
Adios. I am. So this is the best part of it here. I am just so outraged, he told the DailyMail.com outside on court on Tuesday, adding that he has been taunted by conservative groups for being a liberal millennial.
Okay, well, here's my question. Is he a millennial and is he a liberal?
He also said his parents don't provide food or do his laundry for him.
How dare they?
I didn't see the parents' response.
Yeah. It's so funny. You know, he had all the time to put in on this case. Because he doesn't have a job.
Well, I know, because he acted as his own lawyer.
Yeah, right.
He couldn't afford one. So.
Right. He, in fact, was trying to cite legal precedent. How about you put those efforts toward a job?
Greenwood asked a couple to come up with an eviction order that he would sign. It was not decided in court Tuesday how long Michael would be given to move out.
All right.
Here's a point I don't understand. Maybe the Greenwood said, look, to make it legal, let's do it. I would have said to the judge, can I just put locks on the door, new locks on the door, and if he breaks in, have him arrested?
For trespassing, right. He doesn't have any legal right to the property.
But since he plans to appeal, he'll likely be able to stay in the home until the appeal is decided. Well, that might be 6 months in New York.
Oh, it could be 2 years.
The couple's lawyer said he'd like to get an eviction notice that would be enforceable by the sheriff. If it's unclear if Michael ever lived outside of his home, public records connect him with two other Syracuse area homes where he is said to have lived between 2008 and 2010 when he would have been 21 to 23 years old. His parents' home is owned by his mother, who bought it in 1998. Or 1988, the four-bedroom home is worth an estimated $218,000, according to Zillow.
All right.
And by the way, they go through all the letters that we read on yesterday's show.
Yeah. The eviction notices by the parents.
Yeah, I didn't even see this one. I mean, they had one of them about his car. You have three, except they wrote these official notes. You have three acceptable options regarding your vehicle, which was a Volkswagen.
Right.
You can work on the car to effect the necessary repairs. We may offer you financial assistance for this. You can take the car to a repair facility to get it fixed. We may offer you financial assistance for this. Get the vehicle off the property. If it cannot be repaired, we will pay for its removal. Unless you're going to work it on the car immediately, get it off of the ramps.
Sorry. It's on the ramps outside of the house.
Over the past 3 months, wow. The Rotundos have given their son 5 written notices to move out, but he's ignored their orders. They initially tried to get him evicted, but learned that since he is a family member, he would have to be removed from their home through an ejectment proceeding.
Really?
I don't believe we have that in Texas.
I would have to look at the law, but yeah. I'm not aware of it.
In response to his parents' court filings, Michael, who turns 31 in July, acted as his own lawyer. He says his parents have not given him a reason why he is being kicked out or enough time to find a new place. He claims in his response that in the 8 years he has lived with his parents, he has never been expected to contribute to household expenses or assist with chores and the maintenance on the premises, and claims that this is simply a component of his living agreement.
Living agreement.
He also cited a court precedent that says he needs 6 months' notice to be kicked out through an ejectment action. By the way, that says it all right there, by the way.
Hmm.
He claims in his response that in the 8 years he has lived with his parents, he has never been expected to contribute to household expenses or assist with chores or the maintenance of the premises.
Mm-hmm.
They're your parents.
It's a given.
It's a given.
You actually feel responsible yourself to help.
Yeah.
You want to contribute because you respect and love your parents, and you also respect what they're doing for you.
They let you live at their house rent-free for 8 years.
Watch, they'll find that he has a bank account of $2 million somewhere. He's been saving money all this time. It's ridiculous.
And when you think about it, because as we went through it yesterday, the Rotundos first asked their son to leave in a letter written on February 2nd. Mm. His father wrote that after a discussion with your mother, we've decided that you must leave this house immediately. They gave him 14 days to vacate, saying he will not be allowed to return. Mm-hmm. We will take whatever actions are necessary to enforce this decision, the letter read. When he had not moved out 2 weeks later, the parents followed up with another letter telling him he had been evicted. You've been our guest. There is no lease or agreement that gives you any right to stay here without consent, they wrote. They then gave him another 30 days to leave.
Uh-huh.
The couple wrote a third letter 5 days later offering him $1,100 to find a new place to stay and some advice on how to get a new apartment, such as selling any weapons you may have for rent money. There are jobs available even if for those with a poor work history like you. Get one, you have to work. If you want help finding a place, your mother has offered to help you, the letter read. On March 5th, the couple wrote a fourth letter saying that they have seen no indication you are preparing to leave. Be aware that we will take any appropriate actions necessary to make sure that you leave the house as demanded. The most recent letter was written on March 30th. That was about Michael's car. Wow. Said one neighbor, I feel bad for both of them because he's not learning anything by staying at home and he's just wasting their time and money. Michael appears to be no stranger to the civil court system. Last year, he filed a lawsuit against a local Best Buy for discrimination, saying he was fired because he couldn't work Saturdays due to a court visitation schedule. He is seeking nearly $340,000 in damages.
A court visitation schedule?
Yes.
So he's a dad?
He is a dad. Yes, he is a dad. Yes, he is a dad.
Wow.
That was mentioned also, yes.
Wow.
He is a dad. He is
great example. Way to go, dad.
Well, the thing is, he's never going to find work now.
No, he's not.
So your application here. Are you the guy on TV that's living rent-free with your parents? Yeah. Yeah. We'll call you. Don't call us. We'll call you.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Never going to find a job now.
No.
Who's going to hire him?
No. You're a parent. Your number one job is to provide, even if you're not
the primary
caretaker.
Well, that's a great point.
You would work with your employer to say, listen, first of all, can I just guarantee one day off a week and then go back to the person, the other parent, and say, listen, can we work something out so that I can see the child on my day off, whatever day that is, because I want to stay gainfully employed. He doesn't want to stay gainfully employed. He doesn't care.
Make it great, but forget about the parents. What about your obligation to support your son?
He's making an excuse.
Yeah.
Yep. Which, begs the question, is he also having to pay child support? He's not the primary caretaker. I'm guessing he does.
He doesn't have a job. Who's been paying that?
Right.
If he has it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's being,
We don't know. But if you have a child and there's a court-ordered visitation, then it tells me there's some kind of legal, some kind of legal agreement in place between the two parents of that child.
Well, like I said, he's never going to find a job now that his face has been all over.
Well, if you feel like you have no obligation to your children, it's no surprise you feel like you have no obligation and you clearly have no respect for your parents.
Right.
Winner. Man, he must get tired of all the winning. Yeah. But instead, he's outraged.
Yes.
Yeah. Losers often are.
You
because you lose a lot.
You want a sense of entitlement. You want to see what it looks like. We've talked about the pathology of dependency. Do you want a perfect example of it?
Mm-hmm.
There you have it.
Mm-hmm.
With Mr. Rotundo.
Yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, you need a tuning solution? Bully Dog Big Rig now has ECM tuning starting at $9.99. Justin Burt from Bully Dog fills us in.
We did some market research last year and listened to a bunch of the drivers out there and kind of realized that pricing was super important to some of the fellows on the road and readjusted some of our approach to the pricing in the market.
Justin tells us about the good, better, and best solution.
So the good applications for our ECM tuners would be our Watchdog, which just is a monitoring device for the drivers to keep an eye on the essential aspects of the truck, boost, heat, temperature, and the turbo, and the exhaust, and the coolant, things like that. Better would be our ECM tuner, which is where our actual aftermarket ECM calibrations come into play. That's a tuner that allows the driver to plug into their data port, load one of three pre-loaded dyno-tested calibrations that would give them either autonomy, power, or the third setting is an economy slash power tune, which gives them a little bit of both worlds. The best aspect would be the heavy duty GT tuner, which is basically the Watchdog and ECM tuner into one unit. So we've got monitoring capabilities, and you've also got those three preloaded calibrations for your application that'll give you fuel mileage or power or a little bit of both. So the website, bigrig.bullydog.com.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Carol in New York City. Carol, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I want to comment on the guy that was 30 years old and they're trying to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I would think, well, first of all, I would take the key away, tell him, see you later. But since they've taken this to court and stuff, I'd probably put my house up for sale, move to a senior community where they don't allow anybody who's 30 years old to live there.
I was thinking about that, but you took it further than I did, Carol. You know, I was thinking just sell the house and move. No forwarding address.
That's
just
right.
Buy. Just goodbye, yeah.
Exactly.
But I love it. I love the senior community. You know, oh, sorry, we don't allow anyone under 55 here, so.
Exactly.
That's great.
And that's how you get rid of them. It's just so ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I love it.
Yeah, I I think the benefit of them going public on it is you can see a perfect example of the pathology of dependency. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. And what, you know, what it actually does to a human being, where here's a guy who's outraged because, you know, the statement, and he doesn't even realize it. And, you know, he's upset because, as you said, you
he's
know,
outraged.
Conservative outlets are, you know, making him look like a, you know, as a ungrateful millennial or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, no, you are.
Actually,
nobody has to do anything.
The fact that you're an ungrateful millennial makes
you
it look like
an ungrateful
Ungrateful millennial, yeah. there are your actions here. You actually fought it in court. What an embarrassment. But see, he's not embarrassed.
No, he's not.
He's outraged.
Yeah,
outraged.
But we mentioned it yesterday that it gets into, and we mentioned it to start out today's show also.
Yeah.
About, you know, this pathology of dependency. When we read about what former Mayor Bloomberg said about taxing the poor, that the poor need to be taxed to control their behavior. Wow.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they actually believe, and he's one of them. I mean, look, he's one of them that Bloomberg would say, this is my kind of person.
Yeah.
This is a person who believes he can't do anything on his own. He's entitled to what anybody will give him. And the statement when Mr. Rotondo, the 30-year-old, or what is he, 30? Is he 32 now? Whatever.
Okay. Yeah, 32. Yeah. Okay.
When he had come out and said, "Look, there was no expectation that I do anything. They're your parents." What do you mean? There's always an expectation.
Yeah.
When they're your parents.
Yes.
But if he, if he has a child and isn't paying child support and isn't working then, if he doesn't care about his child, why would he care about his parents?
Of course.
They're willing to have the conversation. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And good morning. I'm Gary. He's Eric. 866-90-RED-EYE. Former Trump campaign advisor Michael Caputo opened up to Fox News on Tuesday with Neil Cavuto. After being on Fox News Monday night, remember where he stated that there was another informant who worked for another agency. I know because they came after me, but I have to go to my attorney first. Well, he said that the alleged informants who approached him during the 2016 presidential election, that he opened up to Fox News about them and revealed that the special investigators didn't seem to care about it at all. I gave this information to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, and I gave this information to the Mueller team. They never reached out to the intermediary to check on it, he told Neil Cavuto on Tuesday. They didn't even seem to be taking notes. Caputo said he was approached in early May of 2016 by an intermediary who had been talking to a government official looking to connect with the Trump campaign, purportedly to hand off Hillary Clinton-related emails. Caputo told Cavuto, that could be a tongue twister, that this intermediary is a friend of his willing to go on record at the right time. He noted that both were amazed to be contacted from a government organization which he did not name. Caputo said actual staff members of the government agency had Clinton emails. He noted he didn't want possession of these emails, thinking that they might be classified documents. He urged the intermediary to go through the proper whistleblowing channels. He also said he didn't want to bring the information to the Trump campaign for fear of looking kooky. Caputo added, it was frightening to me. It could be a crime for me to take them into my own custody. He also noted he didn't think much about the incident until WikiLeaks revealed information about the Clinton campaign in October of 2016. Caputo said he had been detailing from revelations he previously disclosed. When we finally find out the truth about this, Director Clapper and the rest of them will be wearing some orange suits, Caputo said on Fox News on Monday night, referring to former Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. The informant spoke with Trump campaign advisor Sam Clovis, too, in addition to Carter Page and foreign policy advisor George Papadopoulos. But, you know, again, with Caputo, it seems like he was on again, and it's like drip, drip, drip. I really can't say anything, but this is what's going on. Now, the one thing he did say is, anything I'm telling you, I told to investigators.
Right.
That's the whole point. He's saying, what I'm telling you, I told to the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, and I gave this to the Mueller team. They all know this. I told them about this.
You know, because
I didn't want to get involved in it because
we asked, I think it was yesterday morning. All right. Because it sounds like a really big claim. Would you wait until your lawyer clears everything so you can talk about it in the open, or do you go forward? Him adding to it that this was part of the testimony that he gave, and the fact that he gave it to Mueller, puts him in a very unique situation that really doesn't have any. There's no wiggle room here, because if that's true, and he, let's say he said something else, for instance, in his testimony or to Mueller's team, and then said something different on Fox News, well, then of course he would be wide open for lying to investigators, lying to lawmakers. But with the Mueller thing, that would be a real deal. That would be something that he knows he would go down for. Because yesterday we were like, whoa, this is a big claim. Because if he's saying it's another agency, it's not the FBI? Mm-hmm. Well, what other agency would it be? if it's the CIA, now we've got a big, big problem. So then it becomes, great, who is this? And how many investigators, moles, informants might there have been trying to infiltrate the Trump campaign? Is it just the two?
And the whole point is, we did hear the word sting.
Mm-hmm.
And right. That would seem to be, if they're coming to an intermediary of yours to let you know that they have Hillary Clinton's emails, mm-hmm. that would be, hypothetically, there would be top secret information in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he just said no. Were they trying to get you? Was it a sting to get you to bite?
Right, a setup, right.
Yeah, was it a setup, which means my question would be, were they even from the organization that they claimed that they were from when they told your intermediary that they represent a different agency, not the FBI?
Right.
And that was early May of 2016 where he said he was approached.
And they weren't taking notes?
And who would this, what organization, what part, unless what he's talking about is the intermediary had nothing to do with the FBI or the CIA, that it was just somebody in the government who worked for the State Department, maybe?
Could be.
He said, we've been talking to a government official, the intermediary told him, to connect with the Trump campaign, purportedly to hand off Hillary Clinton-related emails. And so he apparently told this to the House Senate Intelligence Committee and Mueller.
Yeah.
It seemed like that they weren't interested in that at all, which again brings you to the point, well, did they already know about that?
Well, A, if they didn't, we know now, according to him, if all is accurate and true, that they do. Because if they weren't on that path before, at the time when he told Mueller's team, well, I think things have changed. Assuming Mueller is learning things about this investigation or situation and has not learned about, which, by the way, I would find hard to believe that he's just learning about a lot of this.
Okay, here's my point, though.
Mm-hmm.
When he said it yesterday, I got the impression that he knew that it was a spy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In the which then I thought to be an FBI informant or a CIA
the
informant.
The way he talked, it was on top of right. another
right.
now, spy on top of the other one.
Right. That now we already know now he's saying government official.
Right.
Which a government official could be, that's why I said, could be somebody from, hypothetically, the mm-hmm. State Department.
Right.
That was contacting him and says, hey, if somebody from the State Department wants to do, well, that wouldn't necessarily be a spy.
Right.
It could still be somebody trying to set you up or being monitored by the FBI mm-hmm. to see if you, you know, using that. Is that what he's trying to say? That person who worked maybe for the State Department was a spy for the FBI mm-hmm. who was trying then to set him up. So it wasn't right. the CIA, something
right.
like that.
Which right.
We said that's the first thing that popped in our mind that would be huge.
Working as an informant, but not.
Well, yeah. It was another agency. Well, are you saying that it was another agency outside the FBI that was the informant? Well, then who was the informant working for?
Right.
Because that's where the story gets a little bit confusing to me. Were you being set up or what was going on? Who do you believe that person represented? If they were a government official, that's not how you normally refer to somebody from the CIA or the FBI.
Right.
Because it seemed like the first time he was saying, you know, I was spied upon, I know, because I talked to the spy is what it made it sound like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because he was relating it to the other spy.
Right.
Which implied that, okay, that it was the same kind of situation.
Well, we'll see if his lawyer allows him to talk. So.
Right.
But that would take it to May of 2016, which would then be very interesting if you could tie it back to the FBI or some other intelligence organization. And I don't know, because I don't know what he means by that. I don't know what he means by government official versus yesterday when we thought he was talking about an informant. Now I don't know if he means a government official or an informant, that he believes he was an informant working for another law enforcement organization spying on them or trying to set them up. Because that's the point. If that official was trying to set you up with the Hillary emails, well, then who was watching them? This, I don't know, this can't be a movie. There's too many parts to it, Eric.
No, I said it's going to have to be a series that runs longer than The Simpsons. You're going to have to take decades to get this thing done. It's the story goes way, way too deep.
Let us go to Rod in Conway, Arkansas. Rod, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Great show tonight.
Thanks.
Eight years he lived with his parents, I mean. My God, I called about MS-13 and being animals, but there's no premature ejection there, I'll guarantee you. 8 years, that's a long time. I mean, yeah, okay, but, you know, I was telling, Brian, these guys are animals. I mean, I've seen some of the worst militias in the world, from the Sandinistas in Central America all the way to the militias in North Africa, and... I believe that, I mean, we have no idea what's coming across that stupid border down there. I mean, I used to work the oil patch, if you guys are familiar with South Texas, in Freer, a place called the Snake Farm.
Yeah.
And every night about dusk, you'd see them moving north, and I asked my driller, I first got down from Arkansas, and he goes, oh, yeah, those are the Mexicans. I said, the Mexicans? He goes, yeah, the illegals. Coming across the border and going north. They'll get to the first main highway headed north, and they'll walk till daylight, and then they'll go to ground. And he said, that's how they get north. And I'm like, what about the border? He said, what border? He said, it's a river about ankle deep during this time of year, July. And he goes, yeah, there's no border. There's nobody down there. And it's terrifying to me what could come across that border, because over in the Middle East, it's common known if you want to get in the United States, you don't come through Canada. Or the Air Force, you go to Mexico and walk in, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, so, the interesting thing that I read the other day on the MS-13 whole animal situation is the fact that if you can't use the term animal in that case, then you can't use the word inhumane.
Yeah. Because it's less than human.
Right. Anything less than human, so anybody on the left uses inhumane from now on, immediately you can criticize them because that is saying, in essence, that you're not human.
And Randy Jackson, the former judge on American Idol, can't call people dog anymore.
Wow. Well, I related to the movie 3 Days of the Clapper or 3 Days of the Condor yesterday. So I mean,
yeah.
I guess you can go back. You can go back just 15 years ago.
You can't call a really big guy a big lovable bear anymore because that's less than human. Don't do that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. A member of the notorious MS-13 street gang, known as Animal, if you wonder what we're referring to, who admitted to the 2015 killing of a teenage boy in Massachusetts, was sentenced to 40 years in prison. Officials said on Tuesday the U.S. Attorney's Office in Massachusetts announced the 23-year-old Joel Martinez, who went by the street name of Animal, will be subject to deportation once he's released from federal prison. He pleaded guilty in December to RICO conspiracy and admitting to stabbing a 15-year-old to death. In other news, MSNBC furious now at MS-13, calling them a true terrorist gang organization for using the term Animal.
Something of note there, when he gets out of prison, he killed a 15-year-old, admits to it, and he's going to get out of prison and then deported. Because deportation works. He'll never come back, I'm sure. Wow.
He'd be in his 60s when he came back.
Mm-hmm.
When he would be.
Yeah, so he's going to get out at some point.
Yep.
Nice. Great.
So, I don't know the specifics of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he killed him. I don't know whether they viewed it as murder, or whether they viewed it as manslaughter, mm-hmm. or second degree murder. I don't know the specific charges. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that would be the normal thing after you get out of prison, you would be deported.
Yeah. I'd ask that he not get out of prison. Because he definitely will return, regardless of how old he is. And no, there will be no rehabilitation behind bars. I guarantee that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED Eye. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. In the news today, well, former Trump campaign advisor Michael Caputo speaking up more yesterday, saying that, look, the stuff that I'm telling you, I already told to the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, they know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave the information to Robert Mueller that I had a friend of mine who came to me and said he was contacted by a specific person in another agency, another government official, who wanted to give me Hillary Clinton emails. This was back in May of 2016. Again, way before July of 2016, and that's where he claims he might have been part of a sting that was set up. Now, he said it was a different agency from the FBI, and he hasn't fully explained that yet, but he was on Neil Cavuto yesterday. This was after he was on Fox News on Monday and had this to say.
In Russia, they call this Zolovaki, the national security leadership that secretly spies on the entire citizenry of Russia. And here we are in the United States with our own Soloviki underneath President Obama. Let me tell you something that I know for a fact. This informant, this person that they tried to plan into the campaign and even into the administration, if you believe Axios, he's not the only person that came at the campaign. And the FBI is not the only Obama agency that came at the campaign. I know because they came at me. And I'm looking for clearance from my attorney to reveal this to the public. This is just the beginning. And I'll tell you, when we finally find out the truth about this, Director Clapper and the rest of them are going to be wearing some orange suits.
He said yesterday that when he testified all of this before Mueller, that he has told this to, again, the House Senate Intelligence Committee and also Mueller's investigative team, that the investigative team for Mueller didn't seem concerned about this whatsoever. Whether he was trying to imply that it meant that they might have known about it, that's why they weren't concerned about it, still remains to be seen. But the whole point is, as we said yesterday, when he made these big claims, we're like, okay, why would he be making them? Now that he has said that he's told this to the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, it can be verified.
Well, that's what it comes down to.
Right, the media can talk to somebody in the House or Senate Intelligence Committee, and or today you'll probably have a Democrat or somebody come out and say, he never told that to us, or a Republican come out, or both come out and say, yeah, he did tell us. You know, he did tell us this, and then you'd be able to verify at that particular point.
And then lying to Mueller's team would be, of course, against the law. They could charge him easily.
That would be the whole point. If he did say it,
mm-hmm.
then to the either intelligence committees, mm-hmm. he's under oath also.
Yes.
And Mueller, and so, but if they verify it, well, then he has said that under oath.
Mm-hmm. And Mueller, he knows, is very quick with indictments, would not hesitate to indict him. If he believed that he lied, it could be, and I think it was Alan Dershowitz that pointed out, look, you can go to jail for telling the truth. In other words, Caputo could have told the truth to Mueller or Mueller's team and then said something different on television, it doesn't matter if the if they try and make the case that those two don't jive, those two stories, those two narratives that you gave don't work and are not the same, then we believe you're lying and we believe you lied to us.
Right.
And we can
right.
indict you for lying to investigators.
Right. Even if you were telling the truth to the investigators
right.
and lying when you were on TV.
Exactly.
I think the important thing is he's not telling us who this person is.
Mm-hmm.
From what I get, he told specifically who this person was and what agency it was to both the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, and the Mueller investigation. That's the difference, because that name or the agency could make all the difference in the world as to what point Michael Caputo specifically is attempting to make, the former Trump campaign aide who says he was contacted, and whether it was an attempted sting or whether they were trying to get, you know, into the Trump organization by giving him, and that's the point that he also made on Caputo, that they were trying to, you know, he believes, give them, you know, give him, or they said they had Hillary emails to give him, and he just said, I didn't want to approach the Trump people about this because they just think I was kooky if I did, and I didn't want to say yes to them because I thought I might be breaking the law mm-hmm. if I accepted anything in that possession that might have had top security clearance in it if somebody gives me Hillary email, Hillary emails. And he said, so I wasn't going to touch it. The interesting thing is this was May of 2016. And the other thing that's coming out, whether it's the Wall Street Journal op-ed piece, whether it was, or not op-ed piece, editorial yesterday, Andrew McCarthy, bringing it up and now stating the evidence that's coming out that gives the impression that this investigation started before July. Well, if it started before July, then it wasn't about Papadopoulos. And that's where I think you've got a number of reporters, whether it's Kimberly Strassel, who they quoted stating that she reading the testimony, and that's the whole point. The testimony that's already been made public shows some of the keys that they believe is the at least the beginning of evidence to show that the investigation did not begin in July. And at that point, a lot falls apart because then we've moved the goalpost again.
Yeah, a couple of points on the Mueller team, you know, not really being too concerned or I guess reacting. They're not necessarily going to react in that kind of moment,
right.
assuming they were learning it for the first time. B, they might not have seen it as a big deal, but might see the other spy in the campaign as a big deal because it was something that was more effective or changed the basis of the so-called FBI investigation. And then it could be, you know, and which is more likely that they already knew that. And you were telling them something they had already learned, which really doesn't, you know, was not surprising or raising any eyebrows for that team. So, you know, it's hard because when somebody who has been as outspoken as Caputo has been, especially in recent days, about this whole situation, he's kind of over the top. He's certainly concerned about this. But you also have to look at it from the Mueller team. It can range anything from they're politically driven and purely politically driven, and they're not going to be concerned with anything that favors the president, or that they're going to go through the steps like investigators do, and they're going to not attach too much emotion to one given point. It's,
right.
you know, again, who knows?
President Trump also suggested that the summit with North Korea could be delayed. He said, if it doesn't happen, well, maybe it will happen later. You never know about deals. I made a lot of deals. You never really know. Trump said about the summit, it may not work out for June 12th. Look, we had said this all the time, that it's a crapshoot with North Korea. And we said, look, what's in the best interest of Kim Jong-un? And, you know, we've gone through all the different scenarios there, and when people were getting extremely excited about it, we said, whoa, calm down. If you know the history of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-il, his father, you know that lots of promises are made, lots of overtures are made as if they're willing to negotiate, and then they pull it back. So as we were stating before, people wish to award the president the Nobel Peace Prize for ending the war completely, unless you have a deal and verification and the actual dismantling of the nuclear sites. Well, then you don't have anything with North Korea. As we said, the policy with them is don't trust and verify. This could all work out in the end, but as we've said, Kim Jong-un, what is his motivation? His motivation is not to become a democratic society, because at that point he would be overthrown, and he would be put in jail, and he would be eventually executed for committing crimes against against humanity, mm-hmm. for the things that he has done. So he's not going to give that up. So what does he want? He wants to remain in power, and he wants to help solidify his base by improving his economy a little bit. Not a lot, but just a little bit.
Yep.
And so how does he get to that particular point? That's his self-interest. Our self-interest is to denuclearize them first. Our first self-interest is not for a free North Korea, because that's not a possibility right now. It's denuclearize them. So how do you get to that particular point? You get to that particular point by saying, if you do denuclearize, then we will offer you this, which means he stays in power.
Yeah.
And that's the deal that you have to make, because the first thing that you're concerned about is getting the nukes away from him. Now, is he actually willing to give up his nukes? Many people, including those inside the administration, I'm sure including people like John Bolton, are very suspicious as to whether he really wishes to get rid of them.
Right.
So, well, yeah. We said before, because there was a lot well, this is going to work, and he gets a Nobel Peace Prize. Well, let's put this off a little bit, and also let's not give too much credibility to the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah.
to begin with, I mean, that's sort of bogus. We know the type of people that they've given them to. We know you don't have to earn the Nobel Peace Prize, so getting a prize just for the sake that the other guy who didn't earn the prize got the prize, we have always said, let's temper that excitement.
Well, I'm sure it would be Kim Jong-un that would get the prize.
Yes, we said that already.
And what they would say is, because he gave up his nukes and the U.S. didn't. That's what they would say.
Exactly.
He gave up his ultimate weapons, and the U.S. insisted on keeping theirs.
Right.
That's the case.
So until the U.S. gives up.
Yes. Right.
Their nuclear weapons.
Yes. Unless it's Obama.
By the way, that was where I was going. The same standard didn't seem to apply to Obama, did it?
Of course it did. It was several weeks after he was inaugurated and in office, he gets the Nobel Peace Prize. On what? Things he might do. I mean, you never know. That basically was it. You never know.
Here's the Nobel Peace Prize, President Obama, because you never know.
You never know. He might do some cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, I wish the NFL was that way.
Yeah.
That means my team would have at least 4 Super Bowls.
You never know.
Let's award the Super Bowl now, because why? You never know. It could happen. Yeah. But the biggest news out there is a 30-year-old man that was living with his parents in New York has been ordered to leave his parents' home after they sued to evict him. Michael Rotundo was mad. He said, this is outrageous. The judge announced the decision on Tuesday. The only thing is, his parents have to come back. They have to basically get the order done, the eviction order, and go through the process. So, and because an appeal has been set, he might be able to stay in the house until the appeal has ended. I know, it's driving us crazy. I'm thinking to myself, as Eric did too, just change the locks on the door.
Yeah, right. And then have him file a complaint. Of course, now there's a court order in place. You know, a judge has said, okay, this has to happen. So, you know, the parents kind of set this up to happen.
Perfect example of the pathology of dependency.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, we'll get to this here in just a couple of seconds, because it is even the bigger news than this, is that the report that the NFL at least threw out as a suggestion that if you kneel for the national anthem, it's a 15-yard penalty. Now, we have had some great discussion on that because then kneeling becomes part of the game,
yeah.
Which means can you do instant replay on it? And would it be, hey, Joe Buck,
yeah.
Can you see here in the instant replay film, is there a little air beneath the turf and his knee? Is he technically kneeling or not?
Yeah. And would Tim Tebow cause trigger a penalty if he were playing? No, it wasn't a protest. He was praying.
I'm
sorry.
You're right. How do you know?
Well, because then we were discussing this earlier. So you write the rule. It's likely not going to happen, but you write the rule.
No, it's not going to happen.
Then all they do is change the protest. Then you start saying, well, any form of protest. Well, how do you know it's a protest? What if they decide to just close their eyes during the national anthem? That's the protest, right? I refuse to look at the flag, right? I refuse to witness this or whatever.
I did like one of our callers came up with the penalty box idea, mm-hmm. that the NFL needs a penalty box. And if you kneel, you get in a penalty box,
exactly.
Which is just a penalty box which is covered with American flags, and you're escorted to the penalty box by armed police officers.
I would say that if you kneel during the national anthem, then no team is able to hire you. So that way, Colin Kaepernick would. Oh wait, never mind.
As we've said all along, it's going to be the money because these new players coming in, especially with the reduction in TV ratings, mm-hmm. and then when you look, as all businesses do, look when they get to meet with the Players Association to say, okay, what's our long term contract going to be? They project what revenue is going to be. What's the projection right now is totally different than 2 years ago when the NFL Players Association started telling the players, you better start saving money because we are going on strike. And that was with the projection that revenues were going to go up.
Right.
That's what will change it. Money always does.
Mm-hmm, it does.
It did with Starbucks, didn't it?
Yep.
Well, okay, you can stay until it starts hurting our bottom line.
Yeah. Anybody can come in and they could. Anybody in the store is a customer. Oh, unless you're using drugs or you're sleeping or you're using the bathroom improperly or.
Mm-hmm. It's going to continue.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Well, we've got all those fancy barbecue and grilling tools, the tongs, forks, spatulas, knives, but one expert says many of us don't have the most essential tool, or we don't use it anyway, and that's a meat thermometer. Marianne Gravely with the Agriculture Department's Meat and Poultry Hotline says one of the biggest goofs many of us make when grilling is undercooking to the point of not killing bacteria that may be in or on the meat we're grilling. Some of us say, of course, we can eyeball it and tell if it's cooked right.
Well, the only way to know if you've cooked something thoroughly is to use a meat thermometer. You can't tell by looking.
She says, for example, hamburger patty could be totally gray, no pink, still not be cooked to the required internal temperature of 160 degrees needed to kill any bacteria in there. For whole cuts of beef, pork, and other red meats, it's 145 degrees, poultry cuts 165, and again.
Color's not a reliable indicator of doneness.
So she says to be a real outdoor grilling expert, we have to use a meat thermometer. For more information on grilling or any food safety subject, call the Meat and Poultry Hotline. It's 1-888-MP-HOTLINE. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Carly. Now, what's this proposed bill?
Okay.
Whoa.
Those who want to, this is from Fox News, those who want to see President Trump's border wall built may get a chance to help fund the project if a recently introduced bill is passed. Oh, this is going to be so fun to watch. The legislation introduced by Representative Diane Black of Tennessee, it was introduced last week, would create a border wall trust fund. People could donate any amount of money to it, with the funds specifically donated for, quote, whatever it takes to build the wall, end quote. Okay,
so
that's kind of broad.
So this is crowdfunding then?
Yes. And by the way, taxation is
mandatory.
That's crowdfunding. Yes. Just amazing.
So above and beyond my taxes.
Yeah, just amazing. If we compel you by law, that's crowdfunding, compelled by law. So 866-90-RED-EYE if you want to get in, maybe your thoughts on that or anything else along the way. But here's my thing. I want to watch if go ahead, let's pass this. Because it would be voluntary, right? It'd be voluntary.
Yeah.
So I want to see how many people actually donate to it. And how much.
What's the full cost of the wall? It went from
$15 to $20 to $25 to $30 billion.
It would be interesting because a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, that's what our tax dollars are for. Don't spend our tax dollars over there. But to ask me to additionally put in money beyond what I pay in taxes already to build a wall, no.
Are always working. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric, I'm Gary. Hi, welcome. The crowdfunding, it would be interesting to see what it would do. How many Americans voluntarily pay more taxes? What do they actually get in that fund every year, I wonder?
We know Warren Buffett doesn't put anything in it. I should pay more taxes. You can do that right here. No, thank you. It's like when they asked Liam Neeson, do you think females in Hollywood should make as much as males in Hollywood? Yes, that's, of course they should. Are you willing to take a pay cut to make that happen? No. Why would I do that? I would love to see how much money the fund would build.
Okay, I thought I had it here. I put Google in how much we pay in voluntary taxes.
Mm-hmm.
$73 billion. Mm-hmm. You know that thing. I'm like, really? No way.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're talking about the lottery. It's like no. I got to see how much that fund actually gets.
A new national lottery, and the money would pay for the wall. The poor people would pay for it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was the very quickly here. That was what we started off the show with today. I wasn't going to bring it up now. You just reminded me of that, where Mayor Bloomberg former Mayor Bloomberg of New York City was on a panel discussion with Christine Lagarde, Managing Director of the International Monetary Fund. And he was talking about taxes on the poor. And he says, well, some people say, well, taxes are regressive. But in this case, yes, they are. That's a good thing about them, because the problem is that people don't have a lot of money. And so higher taxes should have a bigger impact on their behavior and how they deal with themselves. So I listen to people saying, oh, we don't want to tax the poor. Well, right. We want the poor to live longer so that they can get an education and enjoy life. And that's why you do want to do exactly what a lot of people say you don't want to do.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We
want to control poor. Poor people don't make a lot of money, so their taxes should be higher.
Right.
Then we can control them more.
Right. We can push them. Or just take their money.
Well, that's one of the things that came out. I read about a couple of pieces on gambling now, and they're saying, well, okay, now poor people pay more in taxes, which is what, and this is a great point, which is what the socialist government wants. They're looking for any type of form of revenue. Think about it. Even and they talked about a couple of these op-ed pieces, a variety. That's why I didn't mention one specific one. I wish I could claim credit for it for myself. But we have talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, you know, even the drug taxes, it's a majority of the middle class and the poor that still will use drugs, even the legal drugs. And so disproportionately, if you look at the progressive tax system, the rich pay a lot more. But when it comes to the voluntary taxes, the poor pay a lot more. But nobody wants the taxes increased on anybody, the mandatory taxes. So everybody, even the poor, is in favor of the voluntary taxes, which are the lottery.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like a user tax. If I if I know that if I play, I'm going to pay.
Right. Because if I pull that lever, the government should get a piece of the action.
Mm-hmm. And I can decide whether to do that or not.
By the way, that was sarcastic
mm-hmm.
when I said should get a... Because I know somebody's going, what did Gary just say? That was sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
I realize it didn't come off as sarcasm.
You know, I mean, that's if you look at it, that's kind of the okay, so what if... this gets back to the whole national sales tax thing, right? Paying as you go. Because, yeah, most people don't think of the tech. Well, when you're playing, when you're gambling, you're not thinking of anything but I hope I win.
Right.
But if you look at the national sales tax, imagine what would change if we every time we made a purchase, we looked at how much we're paying in taxes. Because right now, we look at, you know, what? The net pay that hits our bank. I mean, few people, it was told to me by a payroll professional not too long ago that there are a lot of people that just won't look at their pay stub unless the pay varies, which is usually when it isn't as much as they thought it was going to be, right? Mm-hmm. They think they're getting shorted on their paycheck. So we don't look at anything except for the net that hits the bank. We don't think about the taxes and everything that hits. Well, conservatives do. People who want lower taxes and a smaller central government do. But imagine what we would be as a nation if we were to, every time we made a purchase, we were to see on that receipt what we pay in taxes. I mean, it would change the government forever, which is why people, these liberals like Bloomberg and others, would never, ever want that to go into
place. No, you know what would happen? Government would pass a
transparency law.
Transparency law,
yes.
Like they did for the airlines.
Yeah.
The airlines are breaking down what the
like
taxes
are. Like they tried to do
on
the soda tax.
And yeah. And we don't like them breaking down what the taxes are, so they must just tell you the full price.
Right. And not tell you the taxes.
They can break it down afterwards, but they couldn't tell them to do it. But they must put the full price, mm-hmm. including all of the taxes, mm-hmm. in there, because they weren't. And what they were doing is they were showing you their price. This is mm-hmm. their price. And then you knew
plus
taxes.
Tax.
Then
right.
you knew taxes were going to come, but
right.
it wasn't
just like
until
when
you got
shopping.
Until you got to the last page, and then all the taxes hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, no, airlines can't do that because there's not full transparency. Actually, there was much fuller transparency because
right.
I saw what the initial price was.
And then I saw how much it changed.
And then I saw how much it changed because of your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So when the government says, well, can we come to that conclusion almost across the board that when the government says transparency, they mean the opposite?
Oh, yeah. Well, every time they have a bill, they mean the opposite. The name of the bill.
That's
is
true.
Always the opposite. Affordable Care
Affordable
Act.
Affordable Care Act.
Although it was all an act.
Yes, you're the
we
one.
Did,
yes, you're
we
the
came
one
to that conclusion.
You brought that up.
Yes.
You were the one that said, look, you know, we say that, you know, that they lied, but they really didn't because they said act.
Right.
That it really wasn't
it was,
a bill.
It was all an
it
act.
It was all an act.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I get to this one because this should make some Republicans maybe a little bit more optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
You and I talking about, you know, throughout the show about some of the primaries last night, about what it means. We were laughing at some of the Drudge Report headlines. You go to the Drudge Report, impeach the president.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that, you know, that's still going on. All the discussion from the left talking about the fact that we just can't keep bashing Donald Trump. What Frank Bruni from the New York Times writing a column, we got to get off the Russian collusion thing. This may be working against us now because of its length, how long it's gone on. I don't think it's just the length of how it's gone on. I think even more importantly, it's the direction in where it's going. Trump is looking better and Republicans are looking better because I think it's gone on a long time. People see that there's nothing of substance against the president, so they look at it as a witch hunt. And now as it continues, all the impropriety seem to be focused on the Obama administration. So that's why I think you're going to see this talk now in the next week. But there's a lot of other things, too, where they stand on the issues or where they don't stand on the issues. You and I talked about the fact that, you know, whether it was Chuck Schumer, what was it, a better deal last year where they, you know, their economic plan that had nothing, and then coming out and saying, well, we're going to change the direction, just this week, Schumer coming out again, we're going to change the direction of how we're going to win this election. We're going to bash Trump as being unscrupulous and only caring about the rich. Oh, wow. I mean, that's really a big change for him.
Wow.
Well, this may be one of the reasons. For the first time in this election cycle, Republicans now lead Democrats on the generic ballot, according to a new, just so you know, Reuters poll. Not a conservative media organization.
Right.
About 38% of registered voters would pick the Republican candidate if midterm elections were today, while around 37% would pick a Democrat. 16% said that they were unsure which party they would choose to choose or refuse to take the survey. 7% would opt for a third party candidate, the poll found. A dramatic shift for Democrats who were a full 10 points up on the generic ballot as recently as the end of April. What has caused that kind of a change? What's caused a 10-point swing that quickly, Aaron? Mm. We're talking 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What has caused this to happen for the first time?
Mm.
Is it a combination of everything? Did people look at their paychecks now since February, since it hit in February, and they've recognized it fully and they like it? Is part of it the complete and total dysfunction of the Democrats? Look, I'm not saying there's not dysfunction in the Republicans, but it's on the issues. The majority of the disagreement with Republicans are on specific bills and legislation.
Yeah.
Democrats, it's just, you know, it's pure insanity every day.
Well, I mean, this is what I was saying earlier about, I think there's, and you were saying that you believe that the base probably is growing for the president in terms of support. Who knows if that will lead to, you know, real votes in 2020 or how that will pan out. But, and I think people step back from all the noise, the chatter, the 1,000 kids in the gymnasium all screaming at once. And they ask themselves, all right, how much of this, of what's going on in the media, is actually true? What is the president actually doing? What's going on in my life? You know, what has actually changed? What has he actually tried to do?
Let me ask.
Even the travel ban was what? Right. 90 days.
But let me ask you this. In the last 3 weeks, what have the big changes been? Is it the fact that, you know, the tax cuts happened, everything else, and people saw that? But the perception of the president over the last month on Iran and North Korea. Mm-hmm. Has he been a strong foreign policy president? Can you look at this president and say, wow, I had doubts with him. But you know something? He is the leader of the world superpower.
Right.
And he is promoting that. Not only is he making deals, but when it comes to America's place in the world, he is standing strong. And the Iran deal, what he did with that, and North Korea, has strengthened that or convinced more people.
Well, I was just reading there was a piece in Business Insider talking about Iran's economy is so bad that regardless of what the leadership there has said in reaction to the U.S. pulling out of that deal, they may have to deal with Trump simply because their economy is so bad.
And as my Iranian friend once told me, And she's young. I mean, she's probably only 26, 27 now. I met her when she was 19. And she told me, we all know, it's not the United States' fault. Everybody knows.
Right.
And I said, what's the problem? And quote, it's our stupid government. It's our stupid religion. Is what she said. End of quote. Well, she said wasn't the quote.
Right.
And she said, I said, how do you know? She said, internet. Like, what are you, an idiot? We all have the internet. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. I've never been in Iran.
Well, I mean, we've seen the protests by younger, you know, people in Iran. And the question is, what is the future of that nation?
She said, we know it's not the United States' fault. We all know.
They have to deal with it, or they have to suffer the economy they're in now, or worse.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric. I'm Gary. I'm just excited to go to sleep and wake up and see what the day brings again. Because you never know. When I wake up, it's like, what's going to be happening in the world now?
It is.
Another spy.
Crazy.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.